Good morning. This is Michael Williams from Houston, Texas. Wow. Your voice is absolutely clear, Michael.
Just tell me what to do. We feel that we have to have a program that does something to us. You have the appearance of someone that someone would want to know, but you're a hood ornament.
When you stop looking at other people through these fractured eyes so that you're constantly judging other people and you use the law in order to go after people and say, these people are this and these people are that, what you find out is that in the deep, darkest pit of your heart, you're not disclosing. And so your deep, dark secret is that you yourself are not being honest.
Webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 7th of February 2013. Coming to you from our North American studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee, Music City, USA, where we're linking up with two of our favorite people today. Firstly, we've got the founding president of the Gospel Revolution, the man of a thousand faces from beautiful Houston in the free state of Texas, Mr. Michael Williams.
Hey, Paris. Good morning. How are you today?
Mate, I'm well now. I'm over my frustration of an hour ago.
Technology, can't live with it, can't live without it.
Can't do
it. Yes, I got my morning call from Barris to inform me that there was a one-hour delay. I felt like I was at the Super Bowl and the lights went out or something.
And also we're linking up today with one of our favorite people, Chris Harrington, the man who's, if you can follow his thinking at the speed that he thinks it, you're a better person than I am. Hi, Chris. How are you?
Good morning. How are you, Barris?
Fantastic. Welcome, mate, to the show. This is the first time, guys, that we've tried our new technology. We're using a Citrix piece of software called GoToMeeting. And I've been listening to people advertise this for quite a while, and we just wanted to see what it would look like if we went video, audio, recording. I mean, the whole box and dice. So tonight, you are in for a bit of fun because we don't even know what's going to happen.
Is this going to broadcast video and audio?
I'll extract the audio and
okay,
and then if we can do the video, I'm going to put it up on YouTube. Do you want to change clothes?
I will have to. Yes.
Hey, Michael.
Either that or we got a gun show going on. You're one of the two.
Oh yeah, gun show. Only on one side. That's all you got.
Mike, what was the most interesting thing that happened to you this week?
This week,
The most interesting thing that happened to me is my friend Chris Zumbalin came to visit. So he is visiting here during this week. However, he's off to San Antonio to retrieve his golf clubs from a friend's house that he left them at over a year ago.
So we're not going to see him?
Not today.
Now this is Chris, the guy.
We're seeing Facebook. That's awesome. Oh, there we are.
We're seeing your computer is overloaded. Would you like to hide all webcams? No. Dear, oh dear. This is a lot of fun, guys. I hope you're enjoying the absolute walking on the razor blade as I am.
Michael, it's James Oliver calling from Kelowna, British Columbia. I was at your latest your deal over here in Calgary. I'm just giving you some feedback on the Gospel 101. Man, it's awesome. It's truly awesome. I got the Gospel of Peace, I got the Gospel of Grace, and I got the comparisons between the flood and the cross. I got it done inside. I've listened to it morning and night for 4 days since I got back, and it's made all the difference. It's made all the difference, man. 30 years of reading and struggling and not knowing how to connect the parts and put the puzzle together that's there, and it makes all the difference. I really, really love you for the work you did, man. I really, really love you. Appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Well, one of the reasons I called was I got the Hebrews teaching, Hebrews debunked and revealed, and I just loved it. And I learned so much, and I really enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to getting more teaching. Wanted to let you know that I listen to you, and I enjoy the podcast, and I love going into the archives and listening.
Just keep up the good work, and golly, just great stuff, guys. You're way over my head, Michael. My head hurts. The lady that falls asleep to your teaching, bless her heart, because, you know, what happens to me is it's like, oh, my goodness.
Well,
but it's wonderful stuff, and you take care, and
thank you.
We'll be in touch. Okay, God bless.
Gospel Revolution.
So, Chris, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm a retired school teacher, 33 years of public education, and I work online as a resource person doing what I call intermediation. And I've been doing that for about 15 years, but really concentrating on that this last 2 years since I retired.
What is intermediation?
Intermediation, right. Mediation usually it denotes working with at least two people concerning a contract, or maybe you have people who are going through a divorce and they need to separate things, whatnot. But there's a certain class of mediation where you're working with just one person. You might think of like the prodigal son when he was beside himself. He was double-minded. And so when people are saying one thing and doing something else, there's a need for reconciliation within that human being. And so I'm that go-to person.
Did you say think something and do something else? Or say something and do something else?
Yeah, when they say one thing and do something else. That is, they're conflicted. Depression is a confliction. Anger is a confliction. Of course, those are related terms. But there are lots of things that people do that, you know, they either wish they didn't, or they'd like to make more effective. And so a lot of my work has to do with being more effective in your life and working with your emotions so that you can stop trying to rationalize emotions that are no longer working for you.
Well, maybe you can help me with this question. I noticed on Facebook yesterday, Yvonne Pichet posted, he's one of our gospel revolutionaries from up in the frozen north, and he wrote this: all of the study and dissection of the scriptures is nice, but real people live in the real world with real family and friends who may not see it as we do. Newcomers to the gospel truth need more than just head knowledge in a Facebook group to get through the transitional shock. Let's take a moment to offer some practical experience on how to maintain loving and long-term relationships with those who are still back there. The big question for many of us who leave churches as a result of coming to know the truth is, now what? When someone asks us to pray for their healing, what do? When someone asks us to join them in praise and worship, what do we say? When somebody asks us to come to church, what do? When someone asks us dot, 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 what do we say or do? This really struck a chord with me because I've spent 5 decades of my 6 in various strains of Protestant Christianity.
Sure.
And it left me feeling betrayed. It left me feeling lost. And I felt awfully happy when I found this gospel of grace and truth. Michael, what do you do?
Well, this has been the question of 3 decades. And I have contemplated it. I have responded to it. I have kept silent about it. I've approached it in every way that I know to approach it. And if there's another one, I'll probably do that one too. However, my view of this is that these really are demonstrations of a need for somebody to continually tell us what to do. That even when we're free, we don't really want to be free. Please tell me what to do now. Honestly, through this time, I've been conspicuously quiet about these type of questions because I really feel that the process of finding out how you respond is what's really important. It's not how we respond or how we, there's not a we as a group, this is how we do this now that we understand this and how we handle this. We've never instructed somebody to leave a church. We've never instructed anybody to stop participating in anything. There's a transition as freedom comes in, the understanding of the scriptures, that freedom to think for yourself and that freedom to apply life as it comes is a learning process. There's no need in people simply switching the confines of religious thought to the confines of gospel revolution thought. And this is the way we in the gospel revolution do it as opposed to the way they do it in the Christian community. This truly is freedom that we're talking about. How do you pray for somebody? What do you do when somebody asks, pray for me? What comes up? Maybe that person at that time needs to just say, well, no, I just don't do that anymore. You see, if you're not free to say that, or if you're not free to say, sure, how do you want us to pray? If you're not free to do all of those, you're not going to have any self-discovery in this process. You're not going to know where your heart is as long as you're following the group plan. There is no group plan in this. The group plan is on the eternal side of this understanding of the gospel. There is no group plan on the experiential side of the gospel. This is worked out in each and every heart individually. And I know it's scary. I know that we want to have the group to cling to and the give us the answer, give us the response that we should all have when these things happen. And I ain't going to because I just don't want to rob anyone of that process. For me, that's been a beautiful process. And I had to decide, what do I do in these situations? Each person needs to find their way through these things, knowing that the power of the gospel truly is rooted in understanding who we are and that we are one with each other and with God. And that from that point, the heart has the ability to work through these matters. It's so amazing that the gospel is so inclusive, yet the experience of life is so individual.
Now, you touched on a concept that I've found to be a very powerful one, that of the human desire to be in a tribe. I don't know what you call that, but how do you see this question, Chris?
Sometimes it's helpful to take a look at the terminology that people use and find out how that's reflective of where they're really headed. The word reactive versus the word responsive, for example. Reactive is where someone does something and then you give a pat reaction to that, something that's immediate, it's visceral. This is what I'm supposed to do. And if you have that tribe mentality that says, I'm okayed by the group, I've been validated outside of myself by people out there who think a certain way, well, then as long as I'm waving that flag or holding that instrument or doing this thing or participating in this ritual or whatever it is, I'm okay. I'm okayed by their making me okay. The problem that I have with that is that it's not centered on the moment, on who you are and living responsively. And so therefore, there's no real freedom in there. There's no real free will in there. All right. Everything has to be okayed ahead of time. And so you end up being an Autobot, a machine. And that makes people do things that don't make sense in the stream of consciousness in daily life.
So when somebody asks us to pray for the healing, what do we say or do?
The very first thing to do is to just listen to everything that they've got going. What'll really happen is that they're accessing the feelings that they have concerning what it is that's going on. Nobody will need to say a thing when a mother lays out, this is what happened to my boy. Is there anybody in the room who's going to be able to add to that? Seriously? Can't we just all acknowledge that our being present while she's laying her heart out is the most beautiful, beatific thing that we could possibly do in the moment, to acknowledge that she has this pain and that she's going through this and she doesn't know what to do? You know, what is there to do? Anybody in the room going to bring the boy back to life? Anybody going to make it actually better for her? And so our prayer in that moment is, let me shut up and listen to what this woman has to say, because she's saying directly to God in my presence. And how humbling is that for me to be able to listen fully to her? And then what can I actually add to that, really?
Michael, yeah, Michael.
One of the things that's always really arrested my heart as I've been around these situations is, don't try to correct somebody when they're in the middle of their pain. You know, there's a time for everything, and that's why you can't tell somebody, how do you respond when they do this? Because if somebody's obsessively, compulsively asking you to pray about something that has never changed, then that's like what Chris is talking about. Their actions aren't matching up with what they're saying. They say they believe these things, yet they're repetitively asking everybody to pray for them. And at some point, it might be a good idea just to say, well, I'm not praying for you. I'm just not going to do it. But that's not in the middle of someone's pain that you do that.
Right.
When someone is in distress, we really have to understand what comforting someone is. One lady wrote an article, I really wish I could find it again to this day, and she described in her situation a list of people who approached her as she was facing terminal illness. And she describes how that one came in and told her how that she had sin in her life, and therefore if she would get rid of the sin, then she could get healed. And the other one come in and told her, well, it was God's will. And another one comes in and says, well, the whole church is praying for you, so we know that we're going to get a response. And so everybody had an answer. And in the end of her little article, which was a true story, she said that the one that came in and sat down beside her, and she was waiting for their explanation of the situation and what was her help or why she wasn't going to get help, which everybody had the answers. And this person said, I don't have any answers. I just want you to know that I love you and I'm here for you. And she said that was the only comfort that she received from anyone, was the person who had no answers. Having answers is a great thing to people who have questions. But people who have pain don't need answers. They need comfort.
Mate, we used to have a book. And in the book was, if you've got diabetes, if you've got Guatemalan flu, if you've got avian chicken pox, if you've got, they had a verse, and the verse was very specific. You know, maybe it was that God shelters us under his wings, like he's a supernova chicken or something, and so we could be healed of this. It was.
Well, that would have been for bird flu, right?
It was, yeah, this big cosmic Kentucky fried.
Kentucky fried bird flu.
And I can't believe how we used to apply that stuff. I mean, we applied that more than we had applied medicine. And you're right. Last night I had an experience which was, it's an experience I would never part with. And it's one that I never want. I noticed on Facebook, the son of one of my friends, there seemed to be some bad news, condolences being expressed and so forth. It turns out that he died 24 hours earlier, and I just happened on his Facebook page. I knew his daddy, Carlos, about 42 years, and his 44-year-old son had just committed suicide. And one of the things he said more than anything else is, Donnie, he knows me as Donald. Donnie, he says, I can't tell you how much this phone call means to me. Donnie, I just can't tell you. And all I purposed to do was to call Carlos and listen to his heart. And his response to that was one of gratitude and of understanding that I had nothing to offer except to assure him when he, for the first time, Mike, in decades, I was able to feel honest and say, yes, he is in a better place. Absolutely, he's in a better place. He's free now of the pain. And I was able to, without thinking I was lying. Because, you know, I've buried from babies to 96-year-old people. And sometimes you're always dodging you're dancing on that one. Well, is he in heaven or is he in hell? And you don't want to say to them, yep, sorry, buddy. The seminary I went through encouraged us that the best place to preach the gospel was at a funeral. How sad is that?
Well, we need the absolutes to be able to deal with the variables. And when you do have these absolutes, such as we're one, everybody's in, nobody's going to hell, Jesus did it all, it's complete, it's finished, we're not gaining or maintaining our spiritual identity. Once these absolutes are there, we have the ability to deal with the variables of life, even as to how do I respond to this or that. We can't tell you how to exactly respond to this or that because there's so many variables in that particular situation. This is where the understanding of the gospel places such absolutes between me and the person that I'm talking with, whether I'm in church, out of church, they're in Christianity or any other type of religion. It doesn't make any difference because I know the absolutes that are there for me. They may not be there for them, but I think that it gives me a place to come from to where that I don't have to be combative. I don't have to be corrective. None of those things are needed because neither person's identity is at risk here. So because of those absolutes, I don't need someone to be less than me to have significance. So I don't need to put them in their place. Now, if somebody needs to be put in their place, it really ought to be for their benefit, not for my identity crisis in trying to substantiate that I have value by putting somebody else down.
Yeah.
And the thing of it is that's obvious which one you're coming across with. I have said some of the sternest things. Murphy Height called me, and Murphy will be just fine that I shared this. And I don't even remember the exact question, but Murphy had been in this loop of thinking that he couldn't break out of. And everybody would know me, know this is highly unusual for me. I just cut him off at the knees. And I just started unloading on him. But that's what needed to be done at the time. His thinking was caught in a loop. I wasn't speaking to him sternly because I needed affirmation that he was wrong and I was right. It was just simply because I saw a man in need who needed to break through something. And when there are those absolutes there, it taps a resource in the human that I think that is able to respond. So ever since then, now this has been several weeks ago, now the phone calls that I get from Murphy is, wow, Mike, dude, you totally changed my life last week. You totally changed my life 2 weeks ago. You totally changed my life a month ago. So in dealing with absolutes, we can deal with these variables. Who in the world was going to tell me how to respond to Murph? Nobody could tell me what to do. I even stepped outside of what I normally do. But it was there. And sometimes we do have to speak up. But I really do think that because of these absolutes, then we have direction as to what to do with the variables. But if the absolutes are become variables, then suddenly we're going to try to come up with absolutes for the variables. And we're going to try to come up with these pat answers, as Chris said. I've got to have this answer for that and that answer for this. But that's not where the realm of absolutes exist. The absolutes exist in the completed work of the cross.
You're nodding your head like a like a dying
like
fish.
A bobble dog.
Like one of those
in the
clowns.
Back of a car.
Do you need to be let out of the cage here, Chris?
I'm like really, really, really agreeing. There used to be a time when the police started out everything with a whistle. And Everybody knew when the police whistle went off, oh, nuts. We're caught. We're nabbed. It's up. Now, it's not about that. You go in and you shock and awe people. And the next thing you know, everybody's coming out with their guns and blazing. And it goes from zero to Ruby Ridge or whatever, boom, just like that. And you've got this explosive thing going on. And everybody's used to that. But I think we used to have better signaling mechanisms. And we communicated a lot better. If you look at a McGuffey reader, which is a third grade reader from the 1850s, it was written on what is now considered the eighth or ninth grade level. People they communicated that much better 150 years ago. Now there's so much stuff, it's so complex, we're at it so fast, we need an immediate response. People don't have time to really think through these things and have a relationship. They're so busy trying to get to the end game that they've forgotten to keep the end in mind in the first place. That was the beauty, I think, of what Covey said. Covey's information, if you take, last things first, If you take and you put everything on board all at one time and you find out what is it that we really want, we really want peace, we really want intimacy, we really want health, we really want for things to work out, we want to be able to communicate with people. If you put that out first and that's your projection, well, automatically things are already working out between us. All we need to do is just work out the details. Mm-hmm. But we don't do that kind of negotiation anymore. We go straight to the throat. I remember going through some negotiation classes, and one of them was when somebody comes at you with all their junk at one time, this is horrible and the whole world's upside down and I just can't stand it, blah, blah, blah. You can say, what's wrong? And they're going to tell you everything you've ever done back to the fifth grade, like you're in Goonies, right? Well, I'll start in the fifth grade. And you go crazy like that. Or you could respond to them and say, what can I do to assist you right now in being able to meet your own need? I limit liability. I put the onus on you. I'm allowing myself to step back. I'm not taking this as a personal problem. I'm not taking ownership of your stuff. I'm not taking up an offense for God. I don't understand all that stuff. Let's just start with, you and I are friends. We may not have even met before, but I'm already on your team.
Okay, now what I'm hearing Mike say is, if I have some absolutes in my life, I can move in various different directions and
right.
in different ways depending on the circumstances. And what I'm hearing
right.
you say is, how can I love the person in the moment?
I'm agreeing with Mike, and I'm pushing it just a little bit further, okay? If I have a personal absolute, what I have to do is prove that the other person is wrong. My absolute is absolutely correct, and your guess is absolutely wrong. And so that puts us at odds. If I have a larger umbrella, the largest umbrella, unconditional love, then I can assume we're all on the same team. We're all working mm-hmm. together. I might not be smart enough to figure out your stuff, but I'll bet I can go find an expert who will help us. What the whistle did was it broke consciousness from there's normal stuff, what's going on, and we're trying to pull this bank deal or whatever, and then the whistle would go off me, dude, that's different. Break consciousness like that. And then you can reboot yourself and get back to, yeah, this is not so smart. We just got nabbed. And we could do that with everybody by just, instead of reacting with that, well, you're a moron and I'm okay and you're not so okay, right? Instead, we could respond with, hey, we're all okay.
Hmm.
And I'm not shaming you. I got no sticks to throw or stones to throw at you. What it's all about is that we're attempting to work out how to be more effectively relating to each other so that we can understand what unconditional love is really all about.
Yeah.
If the Bible is all about Jesus, don't you think that most churches would mention him with at least the same frequency as they mention all of their favorite dogmas and doctrine and all those rules of your particular brand of religion? Tithing, moralism, Old Testament law, abortion, gays, politics, all hail the leader, persecution, the end times, don't forget the bloody rules, God's perfect will for your life, fleeing youthful lusts, rock music, speaking in tongues, the coming kingdom, worldliness and how to escape it, those pesky rules, don't forget them, heresy, prophecy, soul-winning missions, offerings, wrong doctrine, right doctrine, and don't forget all those bloody rules, relationships, long hair, short hair, dyed hair, liberalism, greasy grace, Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, dispensationalism, and rules, rules, never-ending bloody rules, and Calvinism, Arminianism, a missionary service, Sunday school, swearing and cussing, besetting sins, sexual purity, oh, and give us some more rules, won't you? False prophets, confession, dress code, mixed swimming, dancing, movies, television, dating, oh, and did I mention the freaking rules?
Gospel Revolution.
What it's all about is that we're attempting to work out how to be more effectively relating to each other so that we can understand what unconditional love is really all about.
What do you think is at the base of Yvonne Pichet's question?
Well, I liked Mike's idea. What we're trying to do is come up with something that is going to keep us from having to be responsible for what's going on. You know, responsible means I'm aware that the other guy might be right. It's above my pay grade to have infinite access. And so I can well afford, knowing that, to listen to everybody.
What I'm hearing Yvonne say here, guys, is, and maybe I'm wrong, is I've got a sister and an uncle and a couple of nephews and two or three friends who are in this church I used to be in. I'm out of it now. I have a different worldview now. But they keep trying to get me saved again or stop me backsliding. They're trying all the things that they know to try and put me back into the place I was in. That's what I think I hear him saying.
Yeah, but, and what I hear them saying is we're miserable that you're not like us. And if you're miserable, even though you believe what you believe, then your belief system's not working for you. I'm perfectly happy that you believe the way that you do. It's not bothering me in the least. My world system is working way better for me than yours is working for you. But you know what? It's not making me happy.
Mm-mm.
We deny our own happiness by virtue of the fact that we have to have these ridiculing points of view that say, I'm okay and you're not.
Yeah, and it really is these challenges that are points of growth.
Yeah.
It is when either one breaks away from the pack or the pack breaks away from the one, and there is no, this is how you handle this. It just isn't. Because it's just like he said, you know, are we talking about your child? Are we talking about your mom? Are we talking about your cousin? Are we talking about somebody you met 15 years ago and your friends? The variables are just immense. We could take this totally out of the gospel or anything spiritual whatsoever and put it in any realm where you suddenly begin to think for yourself and you think differently, regardless of the realm that it's in. If it's politics, God forbid we get on that subject.
But God forbid.
Hey, what do you guys think Paul meant when he said, I have learned to become all things to all people? Who'd like to go first?
Who wants to talk for Paul? Oh, boy.
Ask Paul, Barris.
Yeah, ask Paul for sure. I'll tell you something that I think is kind of interesting along that line, though, okay? Here's something I noticed, because I get up really early in the morning, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and I notice that TV is filled with infomercials. And in these infomercials, they're trying to sell you things, and there are categories of things that they want to hook you into. So, for example, if you're talking about food and cooking and dieting and weight loss and fitness and all that, right? What we have is people will give you anything that you'll buy. So what happens is that you don't really get to see how the body digests food. You really don't get to see the nutrition that we need in terms of the biochemicals. We really don't have that information. Instead, what we want is, here's the food program you can buy, and they'll send you the meals, like Mike was talking about in the first place. Just tell me what to do, right? What happens is that we feel that we have to have a program that does something to us, not that we could actually change our lifestyle and become healthy. So we're dealing with diseases. We're never dealing with health. It's a constant backtracking, and then you have to stick with somebody else's program, and they think for you, like they know anything about nutrition better than you do if you just access the information. So why don't we have nutrition courses where they actually tell you what your body needs in order to function properly? Why not? Then we wouldn't need the multi-billion dollar food and drug and health avenues that Park Avenue is putting out. We wouldn't need all that stuff. Instead, just tell me what to do. We feel that we have to have a program that does something to us.
The commercial world has really tapped into people's lack of confidence in themselves, and this thing is repeating itself over and over, regardless of what direction we look at this. It is that desperate need, just tell me what to do. Somebody tell me how to unscrew up my life. Somebody tell me how to do this. And until we deal with the absolutes, we have to realize there are no absolutes when it comes to opinions, because opinions are variables based on many different scenarios. My whole paradigm is the gospel. That I think that when we look at what Paul said, I've become all things to all men, it's not that he attempted to do that. It's that that's the place that he found as a result of the freedom he found in Christ. He didn't have anything to prove. I think just by him making the comment, it was a realization that he didn't have anything to defend on a personal level.
That's right, exactly.
But on the spiritual level, he had absolute answers, to the point where he challenged even the disciples, and especially the disciples, about their views about the gospel. But when it come down to his interpersonal relationship with them, he had nothing to defend. Show me something better than the gospel that gives a working understanding, not just that we are one, but how we became one. I don't know of another gospel that does that.
Do you, Chris?
I don't know.
Do I what?
Do you know of anything else that does that?
Well, you get hints in this hidden in the makeup of everything in front of us. Everything is constructed, whether it was constructed by someone or that's just the way that the elements align themselves with this concept consciously built into it. That is, there's consciousness in all things.
Is that something like the fractal nature of the gospel that Mike talks about?
Sure, absolutely. And he and I have talked a lot about that. I really think that there's no getting away from it. And it's the work that we do, the effort that we make, the constant antagonism that we have with that keeps us upset and frustrated and fractured all the time. And that the real health is in allowing that to just naturally emanate through us and for us to perceive that that's what's operating at all times. Let me give one more example from the media, because it's really important to me. This is the inner working of what it is that I work on. All right, so if you look at like late night TV, another thing you'll see is dating and fashion and having sexy hair and sexy skin and nails, and your breath has to be just right, and your appearance has to be just so, and you can have all these encounters with people on the telephone, and your jewelry and your clothes, and you get all that stuff already wrapped up together, right? What you get is a performance. You have the appearance of someone that someone would want to know. But that doesn't mean that you have the capability of being intimate with another human being. It means you're a hood ornament. It means that you have the facsimile of being fully human. And what we don't have is a show on there that says, let's talk about how to be intimate with another human being. Why isn't that show on TV? People are scared to death of that. It's a horrifying prospect. And yet, it's the basis, I think, of what Paul is talking about. He's actually seeing himself. In his blindness in Damascus, on the road to Damascus, he actually took a really good look at who he was, and he didn't like what he saw. Because if you're not looking outside and finding fault with everybody else, then you get a chance to take a look at who you are. When you stop looking at other people through these fractured eyes so that you're constantly judging other people and you use the law in order to go after people and say, these people are this and these people are that, what you find out is that in the deep, darkest pit of your heart, you're not disclosing. And so your deep, dark secret is that you yourself are not being honest. You know, people who are busy showing other people's faults and stuff are, in fact, themselves not saying, his fault is X, Y, and Z. And his PDQ. They're never going to do that. They're always going to say, this guy's got a problem and we need to restrict him. Mm-hmm. But they're not saying what their own problems are. And so what happens is that we have an industry, a mentality, a culture, a society built on otherness and working out other people's problems and being able to have this performance in front of other people. But in fact, ultimately, there's no intimacy. And I think that, to me, is what, if there's such a thing as a personal Lord and Savior, if there's such a thing as an intimacy with God, you know, Adam walked with God. I think what really happens is that ultimately, if we're going to have that intimacy, it's got to start from our not looking outward. And we've got to take a good look at who we are as human beings and face that and be honest and be real with ourselves. Begin with the end in mind, I think, and that'll take us to a place of real inner strength, because it allows us to say, you know what, I don't have to tell you all my junk, right? But what I can say is I have no stones to throw at you. We could talk about this in a practical way, because I know you're just trying to be more effective in your life. Me too.
One thing that we have to avoid is not only not judging others, is that when we look at ourselves, is that we're not doing it from a guilt perspective.
That's right. Or shame.
Yes, because yeah. Looking inside can be just as bad as looking outside.
I agree.
It depends on whether or not it is based in law. You can't view yourself based on law any more than you can view somebody else. The reason Paul was so very comfortable in saying, I'm the worst one, is because he didn't take it personally. It wasn't a point of guilt. He wasn't coming from a point of guiltiness. Right. Now, if you can be the person who murdered Christians, if you can be that person and then identify, yes, I did that, yet in the entire demonstration of your life, show that there's no guilt residue hanging around for that, how would you say that guilt was a part of Paul's mentality, if it had been? Part of Paul's testimony wasn't, well, I used to be a murderer, but now I'm a good guy and I don't murder no more. That was not Paul's testimony. When he had a chance to give his testimony on at least three occasions, his testimony was not, I used to be this guy that he was willing to admit that he was, I'm the chief of sinners, but yet that was not the point that he came from when it came to sharing what his life about. Is life about the fact that I used to be a murderer and now I'm not? No, it's about the fact that I used to depend upon my own righteousness, and depending upon the law for that righteousness, not only did I judge you, but I became very self-righteous in myself. But now that I'm free from that, even the fact of what I did, as heinous as it was, is not a controlling factor in my life to date. As we look inside, which is the place to look, the thing that we cannot do is look inside, viewing ourselves from a guilty conscience in relationship to God. Here again is this, I've got an absolute here. All right, so what is the absolute? Whether it's me or you or anybody in any religion, the absolute is that in the eyes of God, I'm not guilty. I'm not held guilty for these actions and deeds anymore. Because of that, I am able to deal with my own actions and deeds, yet it doesn't have its basic roots in me trying to repair my relationship with God. This is how I repair my relationship with Chris or with Barris. This is how I repair my relationship with friends, with family. This is not how I repair my relationship with God. Because I have that absolute that my relationship with God is not variable. It doesn't waver. It doesn't change. Therefore, it gives me the very practical, this is the term everybody wants to get to,
sure.
Gives me the very practical application of dealing with. But you see, if I try to teach people how to practically deal with their relationships, which are variable, without teaching first the understanding of the relationship that is not variable, it doesn't make any difference how well I teach them. They're not going to get it, because they're still coming, as Chris said, from a base of guilt and shame.
So what you're saying, Michael, is before you even worry about these other questions, learn the absolutes. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Yes, these absolutes need to be understood. This fractal nature of the gospel can show up anywhere. But I don't know of anything that has the story that reveals the absolute conclusion the way the gospel does. You know, the mind is going to have to work within a framework. What does the term gospel mean? It means good news. It's simply a story. Stories have power in them. This story happens to not just have power in it. This story is the power of God to the saving of the way I think. There's something about the gospel. There's something about the entire story, the conception of Christ right through his resurrection. Contained in that story is a complete revelation of the oneness of the human race. The gospel is not a way that if we believe this, then the absolutes become absolutes. The gospel is simply information about the things that are already absolutes and cannot be changed. I don't think that I could describe the gospel in any better terms. The gospel doesn't tell you how to change your life. It doesn't tell you how to do anything. The gospel is good news about something that has already changed and is absolute for absolutely everyone, absolutely regardless of what they think, what they believe, what religion they might be in, whether they are happy, sad, broke, male, female. There is nothing variable about this story that gives a revelation about something so absolute.
You absolutely sure?
I am absolutely, absolutely sure. You're going to get that word out of me every time you can, aren't you?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely, mate. You're in the head nodding mode again there, Chris.
I am. I hear that. You know, I come from a slightly different position as far as the people in the world, because included in all inclusiveness are those people who absolutely reject the Bible under all circumstances. And for those people, they access the truth all the time, too, in movies, in records, in books, in every phase of the culture. And you can't get away from it because the truth is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. Mm-hmm. The question is, are you accessing it? And so for those people, if the only point of access I can allow them is that they come from a scriptural or a biblical point of view, or they're quoting a verse from the Bible, those people are not going to have that conversation. So I'm not dogmatically attached to the biblical verbalization of these truths. And that allows me to talk to people who are in every different facet of humanity in a way that I might not have if I were coming, say, strictly from a church point of view. I think that's one thing that happens, is that church talks in a church way to church people, and it converts people to church thinking. And there's nothing wrong with that. Some people need that. But I meet a lot of people, because of who I am as a human being, I meet a lot of people who are definitely outside the box. And the way that they communicate this stuff is not circumscribed by a biblical verse, but it's the same information. The truth is the truth is the truth, no matter how it's stated. So some people talk only in mathematical terms, some people only in scientific terms, some people only in very visceral terms, and those people need the opportunity to communicate these things too. And so for me, I'll reference the Bible as a metaphor. It's a resource, and I'm not glued to it or stuck to it. And in that way, they can say, oh, well, I can listen to this guy because he's not going to bang me over the head with the Bible. Not that Michael would ever do that. But I think that their experience in life says that people have a Bible, and the next thing you know, it's going to be up the side of your head. And for those people, there's some cause for alarm. And so I communicate with them on completely different levels. Sometimes what it takes for us to have a turnaround moment is totally beyond comprehension, and yet we do. And it doesn't always fall within the confines of something that's what we would term as being biblical or even Christian or even religious or even human. It might be something just as fantastic as seeing a sunset, and all of a sudden you get it. What it takes for some people might be a whistle, something that just breaks consciousness.
Listen in your office, in your car, or even your neighborhood bar. You can listen with your whole family.
got the case of the blues. Why don't you listen to the Gospel Revolution?
Gospel Revolution.
Bringing it back to Yvonne's question. Let's say somebody asks me to go to their church, and I'll just answer this for myself, and then I'll ask both you guys, what would you do? If I'm really going to put their selves above myself, I'm going to try and love them in the moment. How can I best love them? Maybe the best way I can love them is to say just say no and just go around all of that stuff. Maybe the best way I can love them is just to be a friend to them that day and go. I mean, it might be a good show. The church might have a good floor show. They, you know, a lot of churches have got great bands and some of the best guitarists and keyboard players around. Heck, you might even get a nice pep talk. And from a purely human experience, not from any spiritual angle at all, it might be an evening well spent. I might look back on it and say, gee, that was a good meeting. That was a lot of fun. And I might have also been a friend to my friend by being with them. Now, whatever their motivation was, you know, every fourth Sunday bring a friend or whatever, I've at least been with him and I've experienced him and I've enjoyed him and I have spent a period of time with this person being present to him. And then again, I might just say, nah, I'm all churched out at the moment. That's how I'd probably respond. How would you respond, guys? So someone just asked you to go to church with them, Mike?
Well, I think your response is that you don't have a response. I mean, it depends on the moment is what you just said, which is really what we have, we've really all concurred with, is that there is no set answer for something like this. I mean, somebody could be asking you to do this because they're trying to get you to comply to them. And which I would just say, absolutely not. You may be going, but I ain't. That's why there is no answer to how do I respond to this. And that's where we have to come to a point where that there is some confidence inside of us that, number one, you're not responsible for how everyone's day is going. I can show you love without being responsible for whether or not you're happy today. I'm just not going to take that on with anyone. Now, if there is something that my response can truly make a difference and it has nothing to do with anything except personal preference, then absolutely. But again, it's all of these variables. It's okay to say no, whether it's let's go get drunk, let's go to church. It doesn't make any difference. No is got to be okay. Now, I might be out with somebody and realize that they are in real trouble and they say, you know, hey, would you go have a drink with me? I'll be the first one to belly up to the bar. Now, I'm probably not going to have as many drinks as the guy who's in trouble, but I'm going to be there. So, again, we have to have some absolutes.
Now, Mike, I'm going to try and praise you what you just said, okay? If you have absolutes, the variables will work themselves out. If you know where you stand, nobody can threaten you. Nobody can tell you it's wrong. Nobody can tell you it's right. You know where you stand. And if where you stand is a big enough place, we are all one.
And that's the absolutes.
And then each of these situations, what do I do? How do I respond to these people who are still in religion? You're going to know what to do exactly when the time comes, and you're going to observe yourself, and observing yourself and how you may change from situation to situation is going to just educate you more about how expansive the gospel is in changing our mentality.
I think there are things that we can agree to about that process. For example, if there's humiliation involved, either being humiliated or you're humiliating another human being, you're on the wrong track. Mm-hmm. That's not heading the right way, because in a unified field theory of cosmic consciousness, we're all one. Nobody's going to be saying I'm an idiot. Nobody's going to be saying I'm a bad boy. No one's going to be saying I'm a rascal, because in the end, we're all going to come to that point of appreciating, and there won't be any shame and there won't be any guilt. Stuff happens and we're working through that. There's no shame about that. It's just a part of the process. And so, if I'm humiliating someone else, or if I'm being humiliated by somebody else, I know this whole thing is going on the wrong track. And my taking an offense to this is on the wrong track. My presupposing that this other person doesn't know and needs to this and has a problem, and from my point of view, shame is defined as that which puts a negative aspect on your identity. I'm a broken person. I'm a bad boy. I'm going to hell. All those negative aspects of identity that say there's something wrong with me as a human being in God's eyes, all of that is going the wrong direction. It's not helpful. It's not effective. It's not something that's going to lead to health. It's always going to lead to psychotic behavior. So as a corollary to this concept of there being unconditional love that is so, grace is so far beyond my ability to understand it, and every day I'm just bathing in the radiance of it, okay? Along with that, that must mean that there is nothing that is able to humiliate me that is going to be sensible or sane or rational or realistic or going to be something that begins with God. God is not standing on a street corner waiting to humiliate me into the dirt. It's not going to.
So when somebody asks you what Yvonne's questions were, what's the first thing that goes into your mind?
Well, you know, I think I used to say something like, I'll go to church with you if you'll go to a sweat lodge ceremony with me. That way, maybe I can open your consciousness up a little bit. Now, I'm not so concerned about that. I would do probably pretty close to what you're doing, which is to say, you know, that fits with my schedule, or I have this other thing, I'm doing a broadcast, or I'm doing a whatever it is, or I have to go to the doctor or whatever. But it might be that on a certain day, I do need to support this person and go. But I need to, a thing I think that really I'm working on in myself, and a lot of people that I work with are also working on this, is the idea of actually giving. That is, if you say, will you go to so-and-so with me, and I give you that time, this is not my being opened up to the potential of being able to set you straight. Oh, your church is all screwed up here. They don't have that, and they don't. And they think you need a dunk instead of sprinkler. You need to talk in tongues, or you don't. All that kind of stuff right there. All those dogmas, right? That stuff needs to be just put in a used to box. That I used to believe, or I used to think, or I used to whatever that stuff. I'm putting that in the used to box, and I think that what can happen is if I'm going to share in that moment with you, this is your story. It's the way that you live. It's how you project. It's how you progress. It's how you, if it's pretense or it's a process or it's a performance or whatever, I'm going to take that for what it is. If you ask me to go to the movie, I don't say, oh, that's Kevin Bacon, everybody. I'm not doing that. He's doing a thing, you know. He knows everybody, 6 degrees of separation. So it's not like that's going to be a big mystery, you know. And so I don't need to walk up to a person that weighs 600 pounds and say, did you know your friend? It's not my clue in life to go around spreading the near truth to everybody, the facts of the situation. You know, people know their stuff. I'm not revealing anything to anybody. I'm not showing any kind of real consciousness raising. To me, real consciousness raising is whatever your situation is, I love you, not in spite of that, but I just love you.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can do that and freely give to you that moment, and I can say I'm here and I'm with you and I'm supportive and I love you, and however you, whatever your music or frame of reference is, you want to display that in front of me and I go for it, I give it away. I'm giving this to you because you're my friend and I love you.
What's your favorite way, Michael, of loving people in the moment?
Well, the only way that we can really figure out how to love people is to know how we're loved ourselves first. And the number one way that I know that I feel loved is that I'm thought of. Just to know that you're thought fondly of.
Would that be like your friend Chris who's staying with you right now?
Yes. I mean, my friendship with Chris has been very enduring for 18 years now. And we can go pretty extended periods of time without actually talking to each other. But you see, there's such a confidence there that I know that I'm in his thoughts, and he knows that I'm in his thoughts. And he knows that that he is in my thoughts. I wound up in his thoughts both ways that way, didn't I?
Can you say that again?
Enough since about, it is all me, about me.
Chris, yeah, Chris, what is your favorite way, Chris, of loving somebody in the moment?
You know, I love to listen to people talk. I like to listen to their stories and try to construct a stream of narrative that allows me to see you know, who they are over time. And sometimes I just get totally lost listening to how people have navigated the universe, you know, from the moment that they're born until the moment that they're sitting right here in front of me, and even their projections in the future. I find that just absolutely fascinating. Totally fascinating. Even people that might seem boring as all get out, say, I went to the store and we got the food and then we went. It's like you listen to the tenor of their voice and how they have, you know, how many thousand cigarettes did you smoke in order to come up with a voice like that? My God, I can just imagine. And so for me, watching them unfold in front of me in the moment is it's treasure.
So Yvonne, I think that if I could answer for all of us, our answer is, what do you do when people ask you to pray? What do you do when people ask you to go to church with them? What do you do when blah, blah, blah? You love them. You just love them. And you'll know at that moment how to love them. And this is not an esoteric, the Spirit's going to guide you, although it might, I mean, who knows? But I do believe that as this gospel gets further into my mind, I'm going to become more natural, less having to put on something I'm not, less having to wear a mask, and I'll be much more comfortable with just saying, I love you. What can I do that'll make your day easier? I go to church with you? Sure. Can I buy you lunch afterwards? Whatever. I remember last night listening, and the phrase that really was motivating was, I want to hear your heart, Carlos. I want to hear your heart. And I don't know any other way to love people. As Chris says, he listens. As Michael says, you're in each other's thoughts. You'll know. You're part of the universal spirit, and you will know. Anything you want to add, guys?
I'm done.
Chris?
Plug me with a fork. There are so many different ways that people try to spiritualize every single choice that they make until finally they're running around in a round room just looking for a corner, and it's never going to happen. And I think that a lot of the work that I do with people has to do with their feeling completely stuck. They can't get out of these depressive moments of having to, for example, the concept of fairness. People want for things to be fair. I have one friend, we've gone over and over and over and over about this, about how when you do something for somebody, you're hoping down the road that they're going to return that favor. Are you expecting that you've done all this for this person? Can't this person just do a little X, Y, and Z on your behalf, whatever? And I'm thinking, okay, this is very much a situation where we have created for ourselves a debt, an emotional debt for other people. So I call you up and I say, I'm going to do you this favor. And then later on, I'm going to call you up and I say, you remember that favor I did you? Well, I'm calling that in. There's no call-in. There's no expectation. You did that for free. I appreciate your having done that, but I don't owe you anything. Otherwise, it wasn't a gift. Yeah. And so I think that we're looking at God and we're wondering, all right, God's given me this gift. All right? He's redeemed me. Now, what is it I have to do in order to earn that? Do I have to obey these rules? Do I have to jump through these hoops? Do I have to perform this stuff? Do I have to do this ritual? Do I have to adopt this dogma? And it's like, I've got to do something. Otherwise, how am I going to repay him? This is like at the cosmic level. How am I going to repay there being a universe created in order for me to consist, in order for me to be redeemed in the first place? What are you going to do that's going to be an equal to that? Are you sure you're up to that challenge?
That's what Paul says in Romans, in Mike's favorite verse, where he says, and who's done a favor for the Lord that he should repay him? We were taught, and this is drummed into us from a very early age in Christendom, yeah, in religion. You're talking, and I'm thinking of a verse of a hymn that goes, "Were the whole realm of nature mine, that were a something a present far too small. Love so amazing, so divine, demands my life, my heart, my all. And it and this concept of I was given a gift, but now I've got to earn it. We're going to have to talk about that again.
Mind-blowing.
To follow up on what Chris was saying, let me just say this. I think that this kind of encapsulates all of this. Spiritualizing choices will paralyze life.
Yeah.
Just say that again.
Spiritualizing choices will paralyze life. There's nothing spiritual about my decisions. And the decisions that needed to be made that were spiritual, the onus of that did not fall on me. It fell on Christ.
Can I get an amen?
Amen.
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 Hey, Chris.
Amen me.
Chris, you're going to come back and visit us again?
I love it. This is fun. I like hanging out with my buddies.
This has been
fun. This is
what
Chris and I do when he's here. A couple of times a year, at least, Chris will come here to the house.
Sit on the floor.
Yeah, he's always in the floor. I never have to provide furniture for Chris. I don't think I've ever seen him in a chair except if we went to the restaurant. And I swear if he was given the opportunity to sit
on the floor,
he would be in the floor instead of
I sit on the floor at home and eat.
Yeah, this has kind of been a little peek into a visit from Chris here at the Williams residence also.
Right.
And I've got a visit coming up from Barris Bartlett also, I think.
Awesome.
Which I'm really looking forward
to. Hey, Chris, what's in his fridge? Does he keep a decent fridge? He's on this diet now. And he doesn't.
I tell you, what he always had in there, okay, there was always a big something that he was going to scoop out of and eat a little bit of it at a time, okay? And then usually it would turn into a science experiment because he's going to go out and get something to eat anyway.
Absolutely.
But, very accurate. Oh, man. I'm scared. I honestly, this man has scared me. Apparently he's eating birdseed and I think he's sucking the grass.
I bet he's doing clean eating and he's working out and he's probably got a six pack by now. I know the last time I was down there, he was working on it big time. But do you know what clean eating is, Michael?
Washing my food.
Yeah, it's a concept of getting all of the junk out of your diet. And I have a Tumblr site, TUMBLR. It's Running Turtle 87. So Tumblr Running Turtle 87, and people can look it up. And it's about clean eating and exercising. It's really, really, really amazing stuff. But taking the junk out of your diet, you know, just eating nutritionally sound. It's a it's a pastime.
Hey, what's the 87 mean, mate? Running turtle, I almost get it.
Yeah, running turtle is, of course, I'm into the paradox, right? But 87, four score and 7 years ago. But it's also the concept of if you get 86, what happens to you?
I don't know.
You die, right?
Oh, is that
you
it?
You die. Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah, you got 86. Yeah, we 86 that. We put in the trash can and we burned it. 86 is you get die. So I figured if you get to 87, you got right past the big one.
Good stuff.
So, nothing goes to waste with Chris.
It's a projection of eternal life, you know?
Oh, I love that.
That's how much I'm loved, 87.
What a top picture. I love it. Yeah. Hey, guys, this is the first time we've ever used this format. Just from both of you, from this morning, what do you think of this go-to-meeting business?
Really comfortable.
It's been very smooth.
Yeah. Well, if I can edit this, and it's easy to edit, and I'm recording it in two places right now just because of the belt and suspenders.
Paranoia.
Yeah. Well, mate, only the paranoid survive. You do know that, Chris.
Yeah, that's right.
Just because you're paranoid, it doesn't mean that someone ain't following you.
That's right.
So, guys, thanks so much for your input. Right. This has been wonderful. This has been just wonderful this morning. And
thank you, Barris.
Okay.
Mike,
later.
We'll repeat this, Chris. We'll repeat this, Mike. Goodbye.
Love it. Bye.
Gospel Revolution.
And so it is that we must leave you folks, but not before we say a huge thank you to all those gospel revolutionaries out there who make it possible to bring you this PowerCast each and every week. If you'd like to join us in increasing our coverage of this gospel of grace and peace, call our office at area code 352-569-4889 and speak to Jeffrey. If you would like to leave a message for the show, simply telephone us at 23456-40971. And if you're calling from outside the United States of America, then just tag a number one on the front. Our web address is www.gospelrevolution.com. And you can catch us on Facebook at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. And don't forget the radio station broadcasting 24/7 at gospelrevolution.radiostream123.com. And so it's good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, here in Nashville, Tennessee, and...
And it's good evening from Michael Williams right here in Houston, Texas. Thanks, guys, so much. We appreciate having Chris on with us today. It was a blast.
All right. Awesome.
Thank you, Chris, for being with us.
You're welcome. It's been fun.
Now, Chris, if people want to get you on the web, where can they find you?
Okay, you can find me at Chris Harrington on Facebook. Pretty simple little graphic you'll see there. Square with a circle with a triangle with a circle inside of it. Chris Harrington, H-E-R-R-I-N-G-T-O-N.
So there you have it. It's good night from me. It's good night from Mike. It's good night from Chris. Thank you, guys, for making this a fantastic show tonight. And don't forget to come back the same time, same channel next week, where we'll do the same thing.
A little bit better.
And more of the same.
Wonderful.
Gospel Revolution PowerCast for the 31st of... bugger me, it's the 7th of February, isn't it? Okay, that's our outro. All right. Now I'll just launch into this, guys, and see where it takes us, eh? Because I have no plans and whatever happens, happens here.
Ding. I've been dinged.
Yeah, we both were dinged. Now it's your turn to ding.
All right.
He dinged himself. I
think so. Thanks, man.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks really.
It's fun. Oh, there we go. I found the escape button.
Where is it?
In the upper left-hand corner of your keyboard, you have an escape button. ESC.
Oh, escape will do it.
And that'll bring you to a point where you can do that.
Okay.
Is it always like this around here, Mildred?
Always. Oh, and it's so embarrassing.
No, I love it. It reminds me of home.